Your kids are almost out of school for the break. Maybe you figured out their vacations, their summer camps. But what about their mental health? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, as part of Mental Health Awareness Month, a closer look at our First Coast kids. How are they doing when it comes to this topic? You can get on the line now and share your stories. Ask your questions at 549-2937. Then later, it's seen as a radical idea by some, but in our Going Green, we'll look at one fascinating area of science. Can we geoengineer this planet to slow the effects of climate change? Yeah. Plus, if you're a jazz fan and can't wait for the Jacksonville Jazz Fest, don't miss it, as our own music director David Luckin joins us later on this hour. We've got some news about a new, just this week only, pop-up jazz radio station. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And last week actually marked Children's Mental Health Awareness Week, emphasizing the importance of an integrated approach to caring for the mental health needs of kids and young adults who've experienced trauma, as well as their families. Here in North Florida, the need is particularly great. Thousands of kids and families need help. But mental health is one of the most underfunded aspects of our healthcare system. In fact, Florida as a whole remains just disgracefully behind the times in the area of mental health. As an editorial actually in today's Florida Times Union points out, the truth is there's basically no system of care in our state when it comes to mental health. So as we look at this topic, as we look at Mental Health Awareness Month, and in particular, the most vulnerable sector of our population, our children, what is being done about this here in our area? It turns out there were a lot of people working within some pretty challenging restraints to try to have a positive impact. And one of them is Vicki Wadewich. She's with the Partnership for Child Health here in Jacksonville, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
We're talking Mental Health Awareness Month on the show right now, but particularly when it comes to kids and young adults. And we want to hear your stories. What's going on with your children? What are your questions? What are your needs and worries? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we want your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. And the organization Mental Health America actually began Mental Health Awareness Month. Their theme this year is fitness for mind and body, looking at the whole person, the physical health, the mental health, all being interconnected, which is so important to talk about. But you, Vicki, at Partnership for Child Health, have the mission to advance the health and well-being of all children in Jacksonville. And so this May, when we look at mental health and our children, can you first bring us up to date on what you're working on this month?
Thank you. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the Partnership for Child Health is actually a nonprofit that's been around in the community since the early 90s. And our mission, like you said, is very simple, to advance the health and well-being of children, youth, and their families. And we've did this through research and identifying gaps in systems and developing processes and programs to fill those gaps with our community stakeholders. And recently, through a series of federal substance abuse mental health service awards, we've been able to work with our community partners to provide services to help fill some of these gaps. Now, one of the things when we talk about May is Mental Health Awareness Month, it really is to bring awareness of the trauma and the impact it can have on the physical, emotional, and mental well-being of children and their families. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about 1 in 5 children have a mental health or meet the criteria for having a mental health illness, in a classroom of 30, that is 6 children.
Yeah.
And then 50% of those children over a lifetime of mental health their symptoms would begin by the age of 14. And so some of the things that we've been doing to address this, one through a series of with our community stakeholders is we've been looking at some of the gaps in these systems and what are some of the things that we can do to shore up those services. And so, for instance, one of the things that we've done is create medical homes for marginalized populations or for specialized populations for children with mental health conditions. And so if you think about pediatricians being the first place that a lot of parents go, and actually the National Alliance of Mental Illness on their fact sheet points parents to their pediatricians as the first line.
That's the gateway.
Exactly.
That's where parents start. But that's not always, not to knock pediatricians, but that's not always the correct answer for every child. It can be sort of, the pediatrician can sort of begin to get a handle on what's going on with that child, but that they might need more specialized help.
Exactly. And through the research, one of the, we've been very fortunate with the federal wards is that we've been able to secure partners with. So, for instance, through the research of Dr. Elise Faluco, she is a psychiatric researcher who, along with the Collaborative Care Project, has trained pediatricians. We've trained over 100 pediatricians in the community, and the idea is to increase their competency to be able to care for children with complex mental health conditions.
Now, we talked a minute ago about how in the state of Florida, there really isn't a real system of care for mental health. It's just a big black hole of, it's not what it needs to be. But I know that you at Partnership for Child Health are involved with what's called the Jacksonville System of Care Initiative. What is that?
Yes. So back in 2010, the city of Jacksonville received a federal grant to really look at the mental health system in Jacksonville. And we were awarded dollars to be able to bring together community stakeholders. And we've looked at, by bringing together these stakeholders and doing research, we've looked at some of the gaps in services. So for instance, one of the things we found that we needed more clinical competency with our clinicians. So we brought in training for trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. We've brought in infant mental health training. We've brought in Dr. Faluco, who has trained pediatricians to be able to care for complex mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. We have developed youth and family-run organizations to be able to provide mental health support. And we've also brought in the SAMHSA Promising Practice of Wraparound, which is a promising practice designed to be able to provide care coordination for families and children who have severe emotional disturbances.
Often when you see signs of an issue in a child, what you're really talking about is the entire family.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we have a tendency to try and treat the child in isolation versus looking at the whole needs of the family. And what we consider as professionals a success may not be what families consider success. And being able to ensure that the whole family is treated, because once that child leaves your office and goes back to that family, if things haven't changed in that family, it's going to be difficult for that child.
You also, at Partnership for Child Health, have launched a new initiative to develop a system of care for kids that identify as LGBT.
Yes. Well, recently with our community partners, one of the things that we have done is we've developed a website and that it's really designed to be a virtual resource for children, youth, and their families, especially children and youth who identify as LGBTQIA+.
Wait a minute. That's a new acronym. Let's explain that to our listeners. LGBTQ. Q, I know, is questioning. What's IA+?
I is intersex, A is asex, and plus is gender conforming, or gender non-conforming, gender expression, all those.
Big umbrella of children that fall along a whole spectrum of identities, right?
Yes.
Which, and so this can be baffling, I think, for many parents who might not accept their child, who might be hostile toward their child, because they fall into this category. What would you say to those families out there who are listening to you talk about this?
Well, that's interesting that you would say that, because the idea behind the website was last year when there was a group of committed stakeholders that came together and realized that we didn't have one centralized location for families and youth who might be struggling with issues that potentially were not being addressed in other areas. So the idea behind the site is it's a child and family friendly community-based resource. And the idea is that it's there to provide resources for children and youth and their families that may have questions. And so it's still in its infancy. It is being populated right now with facts, and there will be resources that will provide the direction for families and youth who may want to ensure that they're going to providers who are committed and knowledgeable about providing care for this population.
And that website, by the way, is JacksYouthEquality.org. Okay,
yes.
Let's go to some calls now. It's Mental Health Awareness Month. How are your kids doing? What are your thoughts, questions? What are your stories? 549-2937. Arthur is in Palatka. Hey, Arthur, good morning.
Hey, well, kudos to your guest. It sounds like she's doing great work. My comment is, look, is the current governor we have has cut different programs like for mental health down to the bone. And he's a big part of the problem. And, you know, I pray that people get out and vote and do not vote him in over Bill Nelson. So that's my comment. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about the politics of mental health. Florida is an underfunded state, and certainly it's not the only one. Now, I know you didn't come on the show to get into a political discussion, but as today's Times Union editorializes, a big part of the reason why we have such a woefully underfunded system of care for mental health is because Florida's legislature declined the expansion of federal dollars in this state to expand Medicaid for lower income residents. And because of that decision, there are millions of Floridians who are in this sort of twilight area in terms of how they have access to health care, Vicki, that cannot access care. What about that piece of this?
Well, right. Medicaid has been not because it wasn't expanded, it has inhibited the access to mental health care for some children, for a lot of families and children. And and that is just incredibly unfortunate for the 5%, because my understanding is there is about 5% that are uninsured. Lutheran Services Florida is the managing entity here that is oversees the mental health dollars for uninsured children. They do have an access line that is provided, and they do fund those services for children who do not have Medicaid. Unfortunately, now the governor did actually declare May 10th as Mental Health Awareness Day in Florida, but because we have an expanded Medicaid, that has become an issue. And with the federal grants that we receive for system of, and these are actually called system of care grants, the idea is that they are seed money for states and communities to be able to identify what they need, and if they need to increase the access by expanding Medicaid, that they would then do that to be able to support the work that's currently being done and that has begun.
If you're just tuning in, we're beginning the hour with a closer look at Mental Health Awareness Month this month of May, and in particular, what's being done to help kids and young adults with mental and behavioral health. Lauren on the north side. Go ahead, Lauren. You're on the radio.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just calling in to let everyone know that we opened up a private practice over on the north side. It's called Discovery Counseling Services. And we're just trying to reach out to that side of town. There's very little over there as far as mental health is concerned.
Right. And thank you so much for pointing that out, Lauren. In parts of town, not only do we have food deserts where people can't maybe get good groceries, we have access to care deserts. And that's an important point, too. Thanks for that call, Vicki.
So that's interesting. One of the first things that we did when we first received this funding was to develop the Federation of Families. And what we did there was we brought family members together who identified what were some of the issues they were having with access to care and what were the barriers. And one of the barriers was location, geography, transportation is a huge issue. And then the hours of operation of organizations, bringing those community stakeholders together. One of the things that we did, and the majority of all of the community stakeholders we have expanded their hours of access, and they also do in-home counseling. So many of the organizations in our community provide what's called on-site behavioral health services. And so it's great that we're opening up locations on the north side and in different areas, and also that the organizations are being responsive to community needs by meeting the needs of the families.
We'll go back to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Meanwhile, here's a really interesting comment for you, Vicki. It's on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Viviana asks, what is their take on the state's safety mandate they passed for schools? The recent law around school safety, it includes a lot of different pieces. But she goes on to say, there is certain funding in that package that goes toward mental health. How do they think the school districts should be spending that portion of state dollars? That's something that got overlooked in all the discussion about gun violence, gun rights, gun restrictions, gun access. That legislation also included more dollars to go toward mental health services for children in our school systems. What about that? And I'm sure you know a lot more about it than I do. So please bring us up to date on what's being done there.
So that was actually some great legislation that happened where through a very unfortunate incident that we were able to get some additional dollars coming into the community. One of the things that I know the school has been working with the Kids Hope Alliance and United Way is expanding the concept of Full Service School Plus. And that's a model that actually through the research of the Partnership for Child Health, when we brought individuals down from the Maryland School of School Mental Health, and we identified what really needed to happen in schools, and that was really having a therapist in every school. And I know that is something that the Duval County Public Schools is working on with the Kids Hope Alliance, and they're looking at adding additional dollars to that to ensure that schools have mental health clinicians in each school.
And what's the status right now? I would guess it's like a patchwork. Some schools might have that, some might not.
Well, currently right now, some do have it and some don't.
Yeah.
Correct. And the full service school model has been around for a while. The full service school plus model, which is having a therapist in each school versus just a feeder pattern, is a recent development over the past few years. We have found that is a very successful model. It has increased the access of, or it has increased the opportunity for children to have access to mental health care on site and to be able to develop relationships with clinicians. And it really destigmatizes, which is also, we know, a huge issue with seeking mental health treatment.
That's an issue for kids and adults. That's an issue for everybody. I feel like we've come a long way in this country when it comes to destigmatizing mental illness and mental health issues, but we've got a long way still to go.
And that's true. And one of the things about training pediatricians and what Dr. Faluco found in her research is that 82% of families who were referred from their pediatrician for mental health treatment actually made it to mental health treatment.
Wow. There's so much more to talk about with this, so I hope you'll come back and bring us up to date at later on this year. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Vicki Wadewitch is with Partnership for Child Health. It is Mental Health Awareness Month. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, we're celebrating some of the best teachers in town. Find out about a big surprise they got this month. But up next, can the geoengineering of our planet Earth help stem the tide of rising seas? First Coast author Jennifer Swanson has some ideas on that in our Going Green. That's right after this.
community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com. The Florida Theater presents Ira Glass, creator and host of This American Life, live at the Florida Theater Saturday, November 10th, 8 p.m. Using audio clips, music, and video, Ira Glass delivers a unique talk sharing lessons from his life and career in storytelling. Ira Glass, live at Florida Theater. Tickets, floridatheater.com.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport. Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app, Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, most scientists agree that Earth is warming rapidly. Glaciers are melting and rising seawaters are submerging islands and coastal cities like Miami. In the coming decades, millions will likely have to escape extreme weather caused by climate change. Now, some scientists say we need to act faster and with radical new technologies to save our planet. They propose something called geoengineering, or engineering the Earth to reset our global thermostat. Yeah. Ideas include everything from thickening clouds with chemicals to reduce the amount of sunlight to actually pulling carbon dioxide from the air with machines. However, critics say geoengineering could actually backfire and create even worse weather. So is geoengineering too risky, or is it our best hope of survival? Those are the questions posed in a new book by award-winning First Coast author Jennifer Swanson. Swanson has published more than 35 nonfiction and fiction books for children. Her books in the How Things Work series by The Child's World were named to the 2012 book list's top 10 books for youth. And her latest book, Geoengineering Earth's Climate, Resetting the Thermostat, won a Green Earth Book Honor Award from the Nature Generation. In today's Going Green on the show, we take a look inside as we welcome back to Studio 5 First Coast author Jennifer Swanson. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so good to see you. And your books reveal your passion for science. They really light kids' imagination up because you write about science in a way that's so riveting for children and young people. You're not a scientist, let's be clear. But yes. You've just received so much renown for the kind of writing you do. So what motivated you to do this book, looking at the idea of geoengineering Earth's climate?
I just thought it was such an interesting topic. This idea developed out of a conversation I had with one of my editors. And we were talking about how kind of in the media, it's all, as you said, it's a lot of it's gloom and doom and oh my gosh. And, you know, we like to give kids of this generation who seem to want to do something, something to do. So with this book, I actually went and talked to some of the top scientists in the field and I said, what are we doing about this? Can we tell kids what we're doing instead of just, oh my gosh, we're all going to die kind of thing. Uh-huh. And they responded. I was really excited to hear from some of these top scientists. And they listed some of the things that they're doing, like carbon capture is a big program. In fact, it's kind of funny. This morning, And there's a big article in MIT Technology all about carbon capture. And what it is it's we have these plants that produce carbon dioxide. If we capture that and then scrub it, believe it or not, it could be used in your Coca-Cola or your Pepsi product. And most people don't think about that. Again, remember I said scrub it because some people were like, ew, that's gross. No, seriously, they pull out all the nasty stuff. But you got to think about how do your drinks get carbonated? They don't just come that way.
Yeah, there are so many ways, so many aspects of our lives that we take so for granted that actually are part of this. And if you're just tuning in, do you think geoengineering can improve the Earth's climate? Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, in your book, you get into all of the scientific experimentation that's going on around this, and it's really a fascinating field. You mentioned carbon capture, pulling carbon literally out of the atmosphere to try to cool the planet off, geoengineering on a global scale. What would you say, though, who've criticized this and said that geoengineering will damage the Earth's ozone layer, it will disrupt rainfall, it could potentially push species into extinction, it could backfire, in other words?
Well, geoengineering is one of those rather interesting terms. So it encompasses a lot of things. So on one hand, you have things that are somewhat innocuous, like carbon capture. You have reforestation, which is kind of intuitive. I mean, you cut down the trees, you should replant them. Then you do have the things that are a little bit more theoretical, which is like injecting things into clouds like dust particles and so forth to reflect back. They also, one scientist wants to put tiny little mirrors between us and the sun out in the in space and reflect the sun back. You know, some of those are still extremely theoretical, in my opinion. And scientists themselves debate back and forth over what works and what doesn't work. Yes, if you inject something into the atmosphere, I mean, look at Kilauea is erupting right now. And all of that ash is going up into the atmosphere. If it reaches the upper atmosphere, it will stay up there for about 2 years. And that will actually naturally could lower some of the temperature of the planet. We've seen that in the past with other volcanoes. But as you well know, when you inject stuff into the air, it doesn't sit there. It goes around, you know, in the air system, it flies around the world. So if we were to do this artificially, we're not sure where that cloud is going to end up. And that can be a whole political thing. If we inject something in the United States and it goes over some other country and affects them, yes, there. And this is one of the things that they're discussing with this, which is why it's still a lot of it is theoretical right now.
What are your questions about geoengineering the Earth's climate? Do you think that can cool the planet or not? Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, conservatives who are actually climate change skeptics have embraced this concept of geoengineering, like House Science Committee Chair Lamar Smith, Republican of Texas. In an op-ed he recently published in the conservative site, The Daily Caller, he said it's an area of research that's been overlooked. Instead of broad, burdensome, ineffective government regulations or pledging to meet arbitrary climate goals, we should use technology to find solutions. And so this may have bipartisan support. At the same time, critics of that mode of thinking say, don't just assume quick technological fixes can get us out of these systemic problems, because this is really about our entire way of life.
Yes.
Our big consumption, our big burning of fossil fuels. And this is such a big, complicated area that can tinkering around the edges with these ideas make a big difference? I think that's the question science is trying to grapple with right now.
It is, exactly. And as you said, this is not going to be an easy short-term fix. We flip a switch and boom, all this happens. And a lot of it is tied to money. I mean, funding. That's just how it works. Carbon capture is getting cheaper. It's just kind of like when the hybrid cars came out. They were really, really expensive and people wanted to support it, but it's tough to buy into that. As the technology improves, the prices go down. People do that and people will get on board. Same thing with the carbon capture. And again, some of the geoengineering things that are a little bit easier to grab your hands around than maybe some of the ones that are a little bit more, we're not totally sure about that science yet.
Let's go to some calls now. 549-2937. Terry is in San Marco right now. Hi, Terry. Good morning.
Good morning. I get really irate about the conversations like this. The public should understand that President Johnson was actually approached about geoengineering, and ExxonMobil and the fossil fuel industries across the globe saw this coming. Then they demonized scientists for pushing renewables and solar and wind. They prevented the development of that all along, and now that they actually can no longer pretend this isn't their reality, they've got to play this game and actually attempt to engineer. If they attempt to engineer, it'll fuel and it'll incentivize chemical companies. It was proposed that hydrogen sulfide would be sprayed into the air. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to harness solar and wind than to have our children breathing particles, little mirrors in the air. And what's scary is these people are for real, in that the American public playing this game against the fossil fuel industry has got to stop. We need to start rallying for wind and solar. You don't need to ship it. You don't need to chemically grow it. You don't need to drill for it. You don't need to put chemicals in the ground to get it. And it's just getting stupid. It's absolutely atrocious that we would talk about engineering the sky instead of using the wind and the sun. And it's just got to stop.
Terry, thanks. Yeah. Okay. So there's Terry saying, look, coming in from the perspective of criticizing this, mm-hmm. as we talked about at the beginning, you get into this in your book. What about her comments?
Well, and these are all valid comments, and these are comments that you're going to hear from both sides. My book is a way of explaining the processes that happen in the earth, as Terry said, the natural processes that occur, and how kids can understand what is happening and come up with ways to do it. She's right. I mean, using wind and solar is great. The biggest obstacle to that is funding and getting people on board with it and making it reliable. Because if you live in Florida, solar power is great. If you live in Alaska, you're going to have problems. So it's almost like each community needs to figure out what would work best for them. But this is a very politically charged
topic. As I'm sure you found when you went about researching your book.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What was the biggest roadblock you ran into in researching this in terms of the politics of it?
Well, interestingly enough, as I said, I spoke to a lot of different scientists on either side. Some of them are very into the solar radiation management, which is the things that they want to do to change the sky. The guys, the scientists that were for deforestation or reforestation and carbon capture were not at all supportive of the solar radiation management people. The people in the solar radiation management were not at all supportive mm-hmm. of reforestation. So within the scientific community, you will hear people have these differing points of view.
Yeah, just like people.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's go to Mitchell in Palatka now. Hi, Mitchell.
Yes, I go along with the reforestation of the deserts and places with no rain. You get plants and crops growing in desert areas, and they will bring in a lot of carbon dioxide. And then you ask, well, where's the water going to come from? It's not going to come from nuclear plants on the seashore. It can come from the Amazon in warships, thousands and thousands of wind-powered warships carrying the water from the Amazon and from the Congo and delivering it to the deserts. And you would not only get the carbon dioxide out of the air, you provide huge areas for residences for people to live and survive that are running to Europe because Africa is drying out all the time. The real solution are wind-powered water ships carrying the water to desert areas to get plants growing. And that's my comment. Hmm.
Thanks for that.
I think that's an interesting concept. And, you know, the one thing that I love about talking about this topic is, as you said, it gets people excited about science. For me. And that's kind of what this book was designed. It's designed for kids sixth grade and up. And I tell teachers that this would be a great debate topic.
And you want to get kids excited about science. Right. This book, all of your books do that.
Yes. That's my goal because as you said, I love science. I've loved it since I was seven and I started my own science club in my garage.
And you found a way to make it work for you as an adult. Because as I mentioned, your books, you've written several dozen books, fiction and nonfiction for kids and young adults. And you've been honored across the literary spectrum for your books. And so it's such a pleasure to always have you on the show since you are a local author. And I encourage everyone to pick this book up for their kids, Geoengineering Earth's Climate, Resetting the Thermostat by First Coast author Jennifer Swanson. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Still to come, we'll play a little jazz on the show. It's our pop-up jazz station this month. But up next, speaking of kids, classrooms, teachers, find out about four local teachers who got a very pleasant surprise the other day. That's in a moment.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Hi, I'm Miguel Sanon.
I'm Nora Jones.
My name is Pedrito Martinez.
I'm Christian McBride with Jazz Night in America. Our new show is bringing you inside the jazz world. We're headed to concerts around the country, from New York to L.A. to D.C., and we're talking directly to musicians, finding out how and why they do what they do. Join me right here for Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Remember what it was like to be in the fourth grade?
It was a great day.
A lot of hopes.
Kelsey, think.
I'm thinking.
And challenges, especially for kids growing up in poor neighborhoods.
Really, this class should be two classes. I need to make this work the best way possible.
On the next reveal, can schools help kids reach the American dream?
Saturday at 3 on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, a new study this week shows nearly all public school teachers dig into their own pockets to pay for school supplies. They spend an average of about $500 a year. That's twice as much as the federal $250 tax deduction available to teachers. Now, given that teachers work very hard for not great pay and they pay out of pocket for those much needed supplies, it was kind of nice this week to learn that four hardworking Jacksonville teachers were surprised in their classrooms with something special. Money! Yes, they each received $15,000 Gladys Pryor Awards for Career Teaching Excellence. This is a program managed by UNF. Here in studio with more, Dr. Diane Yendall-Hoppe, Dean of the UNF College of Education and Human Services. Good morning.
Good morning.
And one of the winners, Joan Bacon. She's an eighth grade teacher at La Villa School of the Arts. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well.
And congratulations. So how did they surprise you with the money and the news?
They walked into my classroom, and I had a combination at that time. One of the gentlemen I teach with, Lee Miller, and I were teaming up with my eighth graders and his sixth graders, showing his sixth graders what it's like to make a comprehensive game board for studying FCAT or any major content areas. And so we had just gotten back from lunch, and there was a lot of kids in the room, and I was playing the game with two of my students because they were, the other child was absent. So I just sat in and I'm just playing my game, minding my own business. And all of a sudden this group of people walk in and I'm still minding my own business. And all the kids stopped talking and I turned around and there was Miss Knight with this group of nice looking people. And I just stopped and was okay, whatever.
And you got $15,000.
And they started talking to me, and I realized all of a sudden what it could be, and I was just, my breath was taken away.
Oh,
that's shocked.
Great. Now, Dr. Hoppe, Joan joins three other teachers to win this year's Gladys Prior Award. This is money that comes from Gilchrist Berg. How are the teachers chosen?
It's such a fantastic program. Since 1997, we've been engaged in this work, and the teachers are nominated between January and March. That's when the process occurs. We receive letters from all over the county recognizing the impressive work that teachers are doing every day in their classroom, and then a committee gets together, and it is really interesting because there is always agreement on the top four candidates. Every year I hear them talk about that.
I guess the cream rises to the top, Miss Bacon. Now, what are you going to do with the money?
Oh, God, you know, I don't know. Diane and I were talking, and everybody says, are you going to take a big trip? And I don't know. I want to buy a really nice piece of jewelry. I know I want that.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Because when I got my national board, I did that as well, because then I can actually just look at it and think, oh, this was so cool. A very dear child. Had just started teaching, and she has a scholarship fund at UNF, and I would like to give some of that money to that scholarship for teachers at UNF. It's the Kristen McCall Scholarship.
Very nice. Now, Dr. Hoppe, as I mentioned, universally teachers pay out of pocket for things that the kids need in class, school supplies. So administering these awards is a small way to honor teachers that really do work hard and sacrifice a lot. It's probably a drop in the bucket compared to the need out there, but it's something. Yeah,
it is fantastic. And we need to understand that teachers do this every day, every teacher, every day to make the difference in kids' lives.
That's right. And that's why these awards were started to begin with. Right.
Absolutely. In fact, Gilchrist Berg realized that Gladys Prior, who was his fourth grade teacher at Ortega, was really special and so much cared about kids that he named this award after her.
Aw, that is so nice. Well, thank a teacher today when you pick your kids up from school. And if you see one of the winners, congratulate them. Joan Bacon, you're an eighth grade teacher at La Villa School of the Arts. Full disclosure, both my kids have gone through that school, so I know what great teachers they have there. Congratulations to you, and
thank
I'm so
you
happy
so
for
much.
You. What a neat thing to have happen, and it's really nice to be able to talk about this. Congratulations, and of course, UNF administers this program. Dr. Diane Yendell Hoppe is dean at UNF's College of Education and Human Services. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And in a moment, Jacksonville's Jazz Festival is coming up. Find out about our pop-up, yes, our pop-up jazz radio station. For 1 week only, we'll tell you how you can listen right after this.
Hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com. The Florida Theater presents Ira Glass, creator and host of This American Life, live at the Florida Theater Saturday, November 10th, 8 p.m. Using audio clips, music, and video, Ira Glass delivers a unique talk sharing lessons from his life and career in storytelling. Ira Glass, live at Florida Theater. Tickets, floridatheater.com.
More women are turning to cryogenic egg freezing as they delay having children. But it's not easy or cheap. There's no guarantee that it will work, and some storage labs have run into trouble. What you need to know about egg freezing as our series Beyond Mother's Day continues next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Tig Notaro.
I have been mistaken for a man at least once a week.
She has a new comedy special. A lot has changed in her life since we last had her on following the comedy set in which she revealed to the audience she had cancer. She's recovered. She's now married to actress Stephanie Allen. And they have twins. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Betsy DeVos guts a team investigating for-profit colleges for things like this.
Steering students into predatory loans, lying about its graduation rates as well as job placement rates.
Are for-profits off the hook? I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, finally, this hour, if you're getting all excited for next weekend's Jacksonville Jazz Festival, we've got a little something-something to get you in the mood. Yes, it's a pop-up jazz radio station here at WJCT for 1 week only. Our music director and station manager, David Luckin, created this thing of beauty. He's good at that, and he joins us now. Hey, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. How are you this morning?
That's your jazz voice.
That's it. Yeah, jazz.
We've got about what are we listening to right now, first of all?
Right now, a little West Montgomery, because okay. It's early morning. We don't want to get too crazy. Real nice music. We've got 1,100 songs in rotation. We don't have everything everyone wants, but we've got a lot of great music in from Miles to West to some new jazz. A little bit of everything for just 1 week, a pop-up jazz station on HD4.
Right.
So you're going to have to have an HD radio. A lot of cars have it, so just flip it from HD1 right over to 4, and you will have jazz right up until the end of the jazz festival.
People who listen to us on our main channel at 89.9, some realize and some don't that we actually have 4 radio channels. And
it's the 3 that are active. We just kind of activated this one.
And you've decided to activate this one for 1 week only.
No, 2 weeks.
2 weeks only. Yeah, yeah. Correct me. So for 2 weeks, you created a radio station out of thin air. That's amazing.
And it has NPR News at the top of the hour, so it's a full-service radio station. Lots of great music and just a little 15-second break at 20 and 40, and then the news at the top of the hour. So it's nonstop jazz. We're already hearing from people, so check it out. And if you like it, email us at music@wjct.org and let us know what you think. The other two stations, in case people don't know, is HD2 is classical music 24/7. HD3 is what we call relax. It's kind of easy listening music for baby boomers. It's all the music we grew up with for the last 50 or 60 years. And now we've got straight ahead jazz and a little new jazz mixed in and a little poetry too. There's some Karen Gibson rock in the mix doing her word poetry jazz. So we're happy. This is fun. And we want to hear from you when you give it a listen.
That's right. As David said, email your feedback about this to music@wjct.org. Now, meantime, the 2018 Jacksonville Jazz Festival is coming up over Memorial Day weekend, May 24th through the 27th. 3 stages of live jazz, food, drinks, shopping, entertainment. The Jazz Festival began, I didn't realize this, in 1981, and it's become, of course, over the years, one of the largest jazz festivals in the country. WJCT actually used to produce the Jazz Festival at our next door Metropolitan Park. But now people are going to come into the city's urban core. There will be 3 different stages to
and
enjoy this.
The courthouse. You're going to have all the courthouse lawn for the 3rd stage. I think that's in place of the landing. And yeah, my first one was 1982 at Mayport. That was the last year at Mayport. And then it moved downtown. And I've been going about every year since. And if I'm correct, I think the Bad Plus is coming this year, and that's going to be who I am dying to see in person.
I'm looking forward to Arturo Sandoval and Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Oh, they're great.
Sheila E. is coming this year. Sheila E.
That's going to be a good one. And Trombone Shorty, I think, is back again. I don't have it in front of me, but Lots of great people. And if you like live music and real music, it's the best way to hear music is to be there in the crowd and have that group consciousness of everyone's on the same page, enjoying the same music. And it's always a fun time.
It really is. It's such a great festival for the city. And if you've never come down for it, you need to come and check out the 2018 Jacksonville Jazz Festival. The website is jacksonvillejazzfest.com, so you can kind of look at the lineup and the schedule. But as David has said, go to our HD4 channel here at 89.9 and enjoy this pop-up radio station for just a couple of weeks. So exciting.
And I shouldn't forget that the Jazz Festival really kicks off on Thursday with the piano competition, which is always just one of the highlights of the whole festival. You're going to see some brilliant young pianists come in and compete to see who's best, and they will get to perform usually on Saturday morning or sometimes Saturday, the winner. So Florida Theater will have that, and then 3 days of great music in person, live, downtown at all the usual places. I'm not sure if they're going to be next to Burrito Gallery this year, but they're definitely going to be in Heming Park and then over at the courthouse.
The swinging stage is at the courthouse, the grooving stage is at Heming Park, and the breezing stage is along Main Street. So
excellent.
Get your tickets now and listen to our HD4 channel for some jazz to get you in the mood for the Memorial Day weekend Jacksonville Jazz Festival. Our own David Luckin, he's always got something cooking that's interesting.
There'll be something in a few months. We'll come up with something new.
That's right. Thanks so much for listening. 1A's up next. How will the populist wave of 2016 carry into the upcoming elections? A closer look at that in just a few minutes. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thanks for listening. And if you're checking out our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, just keep listening for music. Have
Electro
a great day.
Lounge right after you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.